Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about In the Heights and Rita Moreno, Just a Girl Who Decided to Go For It. And I'm going to start with In the Heights. Now, I want to point out that, you know, I'm a big fan of streaming. And I know a lot of people, when this movie came out, said, oh, I'm so glad I get to watch it on, you know, HBO Max. Well, I went to see it in the theater, and I'm so glad I did. Do not watch this on a tiny little screen, even if you have HBO Max, because this is what movies and the movie theaters is meant for. Not just the large spectacle of the large screen, but the surround sound, all of that is necessary to really appreciate this movie. Let's start there, Mike, because there's so many ways to approach this. Let's talk about it just in terms of just a movie.
Well, to even preface that by way of background, it's based on a 2008 Broadway musical, which won the Tony Award for Best Musical, Lin-Manuel Miranda, so many years before Hamilton. And I know this musical rather well. I saw the original Broadway production on tour when it came to the Hippodrome Theater in Baltimore in 2010. And then on a very local note for our audience in Howard County, I saw it a bit after that in 2013 at Toby's Dinner Theater. So I've seen it in big theaters and small theaters. In terms of the storyline, it's set in Washington Heights on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And in fact, you know, it has been referred to as Upper West Side Story in terms of the storyline, because it's very much about, you know, it's Puerto Rican and Cuban and Dominican. And it's, you know, just think of, you know, all the, you know, Central American and Latin American countries, almost everyone gets represented somehow. And I've been in that neighborhood before. It's been a while, but I mean, it really is a cultural quilt that way. So if we say Latino culture, yeah, you know, primarily Dominican with characters we're doing, but not entirely. We have some who are Cuban, you know, Puerto Rican. It's a real mix that way. And it's a celebration of that. Now, seeing it on stage, you know, it's an exuberant musical. My reservations about it as a show, and I do like it a lot. It's such an energetic show. How can you not love the energy level and just the feel-good vibe of it? In terms of the characters and the storyline, sometimes that gets a little thin on stage or a little too heavy-handed. By heavy-handed, I mean sort of like sentiment on the sleeve. Like if you're singing about, I love you because kind of lines, right? Sometimes that like kind of pushing it a little too obvious. But those are minor reservations because these are likable characters. It's an endearing story. The music is really terrific. So are the lyrics for the most part. I mean, they really celebrate the culture. Here's the slight problem, and I really like the movie version, and they have almost the same exact running time. It's really true to the stage show that way. But my main reservation about the movie version is on the one hand, on the other hand. On the one hand, there are really some really engaging musical production numbers. I mean, you have dozens of people dancing in the street or swimming in a pool. You think Busby Berkeley must have choreographed it. It's got that level of energy and enjoyment and creativity. And as Marie said, all the more reason to see it in the theater. You want to have that shared experience. You want the big screen to see that splash across the screen. That's on the one hand. And that's ultimately the hand that's going to applaud with the other one because it's really delightful to watch. On the other hand, there are places where some of the musical production numbers, I think in the movie version, more so than in the stage version, do go on a bit. And sometimes the editing's a little clumsy or hectic or, you know, it's kind of frenetic editing. But what happens is I think sometimes there are aspects of character and story that almost get lost. You know, it's just like somehow, and I have to remind myself, oh yeah, that's so-and-so, that he's one of the main characters and whatever the situation is. But this has been swept up for 10 minutes in a musical production number. So if it's a complaint, it's a very mild one because, you know, that first hand is just how enjoyable it is to watch the musical production numbers. The other hand is there is a serious and seriously engaging storyline with character and theme and so on. But I think sometimes it gets not totally lost, but it just sort of gets in with the mix, if you will, that way. What do you think about that?
I think you mentioned so many things I wanted to follow up with, starting with the exuberance of it. I think that's actually its selling point. And when you think about it, it's funny that this is something Lin-Manuel Miranda worked on before Hamilton, because it comes out on the big screen after Hamilton. So it feels like, well, how do you follow up something as, you know, huge as Hamilton that, you know, kind of rocked everybody back on their heels in terms of what could be done with historical material in terms of casting all people of color. I mean, all the things that were so groundbreaking about Hamilton, so much attention, so much praise. How do you follow that up? And this is a very personal story. And of course, it's called In the Heights because, you know, this is actually where he grew up. And we're going to talk about Rita Moreno soon. And she grew up there. It's a neighborhood story. And, you know, when they describe it as, you know, a little bit like Do the Right Thing, I see where they're going with that because it's very specific to a neighborhood. But it's also a great title because In the Heights also kind of clues you in that it's about trying to reach the heights, about striving for the American dream. It works on a lot of levels in terms of the title. And of course, you know, that splash that you mentioned, you know, the showmanship is certainly there. There's wonderful dance numbers, wonderful songs, everything you'd expect from Lin-Manuel Miranda. But then it also has this wonderful experience you have of seeing some of the, you know, your favorite actors, and you don't even recognize them at first. Jimmy Smits, of course, you recognize immediately. But I didn't see that that was Mark Anthony playing that role until almost the end of the movie. I mean, it was just so deftly woven in. And of course, it's a joy to see Laverne Cox in a small role. You know, your favorite people show up in this movie and they're singing and dancing. And if you didn't know they had those talents, it's just a joy to watch. What did you think about that aspect?
Well, you know, in terms of the joy of it, let's put it in a career context. You know, this musical comes out quite a few years before Hamilton. And yet thematically, Lin-Manuel Miranda, a lot of his interests are there already. In the Heights is what? Washington Heights. Gee, who's that name for? George Washington. Who's one of the main characters in Hamilton? George Washington. One thing I loved about the production design in the Broadway musical is at the back of it, you know, running across the back of the stage is the George Washington Bridge. And if you've been on that side of Manhattan, as you get into the upper reaches of it, that is an enormous bridge. And it really dominates things that way. And that also carries through in the film. The film is true to the tradition of the Hollywood musical. There are times when it's deliberately anti-realistic, as it should be. It's a joyous musical. There's one production number in particular where, you know, our two protagonists are actually dancing up the side of an apartment building. They are defying the laws of gravity, and good for them. There are production numbers on the street and swimming pool, which are obviously artifice. So I've always been intrigued by the comparison with Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, which is a masterpiece. I use it in a course. It's one of my favorite films. But this film, while it's similar in some ways in terms of, you know, racial mixtures and some of the tensions and issues that come up for sure, this film is much more sweet-natured in the sense that, not that it's all hearts and flowers, it has serious issues, but it's a gentler look at those very serious issues. Let's actually identify at least one of the serious issues right now. When this film, well, when the Broadway musical came out, you know, gentrification was becoming an issue in neighborhoods like Washington Heights. What happens when you have a long-lasting community, or communities, if you will, of color, but specifically Latino communities, the Puerto Ricans, the Cubans, the Dominicans, on and on that way. And, you know, some white people, if you will, and some black people, but it's a real crazy quilt. I mean, crazy quilt in the quilting sense of a real mixture of elements there. What are the worries, though, if the neighborhood starts to gentrify? That's an issue, certainly in the last decade or so, but think about how that issue plays out here. I'm going to give you a line of dialogue, which actually comes from the stage version, because I wrote it down from the stage version, but there's a similar line in the film version. You have the character Usnavi, who actually, the reason he's called Usnavi, because his father, you know, coming into New York as an immigrant, had seen a U.S. naval vessel, U.S. Navy, and Usnavi became the guy's name. In the original Broadway musical, that character was played by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Now, he's too old to play that part now. It really needs to be a young man, not a middle-aged man. But Miranda, as you know, does pop up in this version. He's the Paragua guy, as they call him in the film version. He's pushing the cart down the street, you know, selling snowballs. So he does have that moment in the film here. This character, Usnavi, is running a bodega. It's that corner mini supermarket, if you will. You're not only buying products there, you're buying culture. And look at the walls behind it, the photographs and flags and things. It's a cultural outpost as much as anything. But you know what? When neighborhoods gentrify, you know, somebody might want to sell the building, or the rent could be hiked up, all the issues that come up with gentrification. As he's about to say goodbye, farewell to the bodega, he says this: in 5 years, when the whole city's rich folks and hipsters, who's going to miss this raggedy little business? So as Marie and I start talking about individual characters and storylines, this is underpinning it. And this is, again, from early in the 21st century, this worry of if the neighborhood changes, and more people move in and people of different ethnicities and with more money and so on, what happens to the folks who've lived here for decades? Do they get pushed out? It gets more complicated than that because some of the people do want to get out or move on. Some want to move back to countries of origin. You know, they want to go back to the island, if you will, and that's something we can talk about. Other people just want to move to other opportunities, other places. And some people aren't sure. The one character who's grown up in this neighborhood, she's been a student at Stanford. And you would think she's on an upward mobility track and her parents are putting all their money into getting her through college. She feels isolated there, that not that people make fun of her, but just simply that she's the only person like herself. She doesn't see people like her there. She wants to quit school. You know, people are conflicted that way. So let me turn it back to you, Marie, in terms of as we get into the storyline. Again, this is material. This is a Broadway musical, now film version, that goes back a ways. And yet watching it, you feel like, goodness sakes, these are the very issues that we talk about now. I always say the same thing with Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. That film came out in 1989. When I show it to my classes now, I think, my goodness, is this a 2021 release? You know, I mean, it's just everything is still fresh, which in some ways is depressing that so many of the issues we're wrestling with go back to what, you know, he was wrestling with, you know, all those decades ago.
You make a great point about Do the Right Thing. And I love using it in my class because my students, like yours, it feels new because some things just never changed. Now, you mentioned cultural quilt, which I think was a great way to describe this movie, because one of the things I think is done very deftly is weaving in enough details that at the end, you literally do see the effects of the cumulative details, that it's all about the details that make up, you know, your understanding of a place. Now, this is not a place that I know, so I'm visiting a neighborhood I'm unfamiliar with, but I was fascinated the whole time of what it was showing and demonstrating. Now, the director said he was inspired by Do the Right Thing and also Annie Hall. So I do want to get your take on that, because I know, you know, you teach a whole course or have taught a whole course about Woody Allen movies. And I agree with you that this movie is a Valentine to the neighborhood of Washington Heights. And it does make some really good points, like you had mentioned, about the character who has gone to Stanford and has had an experience that isn't what she expected. But when she comes back, you know, everybody's proud of her for having gotten out and, you know, she's succeeding on that arena, and it's hard for her to explain to people who want her to succeed there how, you know, it might not even be what I want. And I feel like I'm losing a little bit of myself even participating in this world. It does try to make some commentary about fitting in, about assimilating while you're chasing that American dream. And I think that's kind of one of the like serious aspects of the movie that take it beyond just being, you know, Upper West Side Story. But given that they are remaking West Side Story, I want to mention that the filming for this coincided with Steven Spielberg remaking West Side Story. And they were close enough that sometimes, you know, their sets were so close that at one point, catering truck for Spielberg's film was in their shots. So, you know, that had to be sort of weird for them to be making their movie, you know, very updated take on things with the remake of West Side Story. So I think we should at least say something about the comparisons to West Side Story and how that tried to tell this same story, but, you know, back in the day, and better, worse, different. What do you think, Mike?
Well, in terms of the material itself, there are cultural clashes here. In terms of the central romances, for instance, in this film, in the Heights, there's the Stanford student, Nina, who's had a sort of on-again, mostly off-again romantic relationship with a car dispatch worker named Benny. And again, you do get into areas of skin complexion, if you will. What's your background? What's mine? What are your aspirations? You know, there are some differences and some tensions there. That's why it's compared both to West Side Story and also to Annie Hall. And you know, these are very much Manhattan-based stories in a lot of ways. In terms of the Spielberg remake, it's going to have more principal actors who are themselves Latino by way of derivation. You know what I mean? Whereas West Side Story was criticized, of course, for in a few cases having, you know, white actors playing characters who are, you know, meant to be actors, characters rather of color. So we can get into that. Now, in terms of, you know, Rita Moreno, who we'll be talking about shortly, You know, she actually has a role. She won an Academy Award Best Supporting Actress for the original West Side Story in 1961. Spielberg has given her a role in the remake that he's doing, which comes out later this year. So there's all sorts of carryover and continuity that you'll see Rita Moreno in that remake. And Spielberg, you know, I've not seen any footage from it, but from what I've read, you know, we'll have the principal roles played by, you know, actors of color, or let's put it this way, more sensitivity in the casting than there would have been in a Hollywood movie in the early 60s. But that formula, which is essentially still revamping Romeo and Juliet in some ways, my family's from one side of the tracks, your family's from the other side of the tracks, can we get along? And that there's a lot of pressure there. So the central romantic pairings in the Heights very much have, and after all, when West Side Story came out in 1957, the Broadway musical, the original, everyone talked about Romeo and Juliet, right? And so now when we have more recent films like In the Heights, everybody goes back to, well, Upper West Side Story. So there's a thematic playing through there that you can trace back to Shakespeare. And that's the kind of tension, actually, that makes for really good storytelling. You know, the film, I think, sometimes loses that thread a little bit because it gets on these extended musical numbers and so on. And then suddenly one of the principal characters pops up again. And think, oh, yeah, right, you're the one who's back from Stanford, right? You know, I mean, I don't think it's just me. I think there are places where some of the characters almost get lost for a little while. But they always do return or recur. And, you know, emotionally, it works very well for me. It's a really not just enjoyable at the level of a musical, but how the characters will turn out, what they will decide.
Now, you mentioned the characters, so I'm just going to tee this up so you can talk about the characters to the extent that you want to. But also, I want to get this in here before I forget, that you actually teach a course in Latin American film from time to time. So if and when that course comes up again, where would In the Heights fit into that? Where does that movie fit into what you teach in that course? So when it comes up, people, you know, will know how much they want to take it. And also, would this be a movie that you included in that course now, since it's new and, you know, if you were teaching it for the first time? So characters in Latin American film, take it away, Mike.
Well, actually, the short answer is I would never use this film in that course. And it's not because I don't like the film, but it's not appropriate for that course. That course is a survey of Latin American and into Central American cinema. So we watch films actually made, you know, in Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, Peru, Mexico, and so on. So that's a case where, you know, we go country by country, or at least sample a few countries, and watch films made by those national film industries. Where I would mention it, Marie, and to your point, is certainly, you know, we will talk about ways in which that culture has traveled to us. And so, you know, as we're watching some of those films, invariably we're reminded of Hollywood films that have some points of comparison. So, Marie, yeah, in a more indirect way, you're absolutely right. I oftentimes will mention films like In the Heights, probably in future there, just because, you know, if you have a musical production number in a film made in one of those Latin American countries, how could you not somehow talk, whether going back in Hollywood film history, like, remember Carmen Miranda, you know, she's dancing away, and she's got the, you know, the bananas on her head, you know, and that kind of sort of stereotypical, but I would say enjoyably stereotypical, you know, how can you almost not like laugh out loud when you see the way she's dressed and how she's dancing, but how Hollywood would present a Latina there. And, you know, that's a very complicated scenario to talk about, but how that would be presented there, and more recent manifestations, if you will, specifically within, let's say, the musical genre. So, Marie, again, doubling back on your question, sure, there are many opportunities within a course like that one to mention a film like In the Heights, but strictly speaking, I wouldn't be using the film itself.
I don't want to belabor the point because I do want to move on to Rita Moreno, but I just one final question. Do you at least bring up Lin-Manuel Miranda in your course about Latin American movies?
And not to this point, because it's been a few years since I taught that course. So, you know, there would not have been as much reason to at that point. Probably not. And the only reason not, again, is not to slight him whatsoever. It's just simply, it's a continental survey. There's so much I want to say about films from Brazil and Argentina and Uruguay and Chile and Peru and Mexico and on and on, that it's all I can do just to mention those countries. And what I like to do is keep the focus on feature-length films made within those national film industries, not Hollywood films that reference those cultures, But what will happen, Marie, usually during audience discussions is somebody in the class will say, you know, that reminds me of, and then fill in the blank. And it could be Lin-Manuel Miranda. It could be any number of things. And I love that. Sure. We're always looking to make connections between our country, if you will, and those other countries. I love doing it that way. But if I were to overtly work in films like In the Heights into the course, I think it'd become a very different course at that point. It could be a really interesting intercultural examination, but it would be a different course at that point.
Thanks for that clarification. Just, you know, in case that comes up, people will know what they're getting into. So now we're going to talk about Rita Moreno. And the film is a documentary called Rita Moreno, Just a Girl Who Decided to Go For It. Now, you know, when you watch this, and by the way, right now, this is only available in the theaters, but I don't think it'll be too long before it's available to stream. You should definitely catch this because, you know, Rita Moreno has been around forever. You know, when you actually look back at her career, it's like, wow, I mean, she was singing for the troops in World War II. You know, she was just one of these people born to be on the stage. You know, from a really young age, she was the family breadwinner for her talents. You know, she got her Broadway debut at age 13. She danced professionally at age 6. Kind of just one of these people just born to do this was always going to happen. And of course, she's considered to be this, you know, trailblazer, you know, in terms of Hispanic roles. But when you watch her documentary and she talks about what it was like to really do it, you realize how much has changed since she started out, because, you know, she was meant to be the standard bearer for like all brown roles. Like, okay, you can play the Pacific Islander and you can play the Native American lady. And, you know, they would give her makeup that she described as looking just like mud, you know, and she was just meant to like be all of these characters, which I think was very difficult for her because she had such a strong identity as a Puerto Rican woman. Now, one of the interesting anecdotes is at one point she poses for this, I think it was Life magazine, and she's looking over her shoulder and she's beautiful and she looks wonderful. And they referred to her after that as the Puerto Rican Liz Taylor. And at this point, she's already done so much work on stage and, you know, trying so hard to be noticed. But it's that picture that makes somebody pick up the phone and say, who is that girl? Get me that girl. And the wonderful thing about this documentary, I think, is how candidly she addresses the camera and just tells it like it is.
Well, you know, you made a lot of important observations about her, and to pick up on several of them, you know, a reminder, since we were talking about Lin-Manuel Miranda and In the Heights in the first half of our episode today, he's one of the executive producers of the Rita Moreno documentary. There's a lot of cross-fertilization going on here, folks.
And she's now 89. The Heights. And she's from the Heights.
Yeah. You know, and you know, she was born in Puerto Rico, but as a small child brought to New York, very similar backgrounds in some ways, a lot of points of connection. She's 89 years old now. She's had a long, long career. As Marie said, you know, in her mid-teens, she's on Broadway and in movies. But a few points to make about her. And in fact, the movie I see her in all the time from her early career would be Singing in the Rain, 1952. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, she's in Hollywood movies then. Most of them, and Singing in the Rain is an all-time classic, but most of the movies she does in the 50s are not very good, and from her perspective are demeaning. This is Marie's point. Because she is a woman of color, she's got the brown skin, from a Hollywood producer standpoint, she can play ethnic. It's really crude to put it this way, but she can play ethnic. So she actually was in movies like one called Latin Lovers from 1953, you can imagine. She also, in some other movies like The Yellow Tomahawk, she would play a Native American. They thought, well, she's dark skinned, let her play the Indian girl. So she would play, you know, Latinas, but also Indian. And the real stretch, of course, The King and I, 1956, is a big commercial hit, you know, as it had been on Broadway. And you know, and she's playing, you know, Thai. She's, after all, you know, she's got darker skin, so she can play Latina, American Indian, Thai, whatever. And, you know, this is something that bothers her. And it's great to have her in contemporary interviews, the interviews that are at the heart of this documentary, where she complains about that. Where she has her big breakthrough is West Side Story, 1961. She wins the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress. You know what? The phone didn't ring after that. She was not getting roles. She really has a very spotty record in terms of feature filmmaking, although she's famous for having won an Academy Award, a Tony, an Emmy, you know, a Grammy, you know, all that. She's in that select club. She wasn't always getting work in Hollywood. And the reason has a lot to do with She was playing Anita in West Side Story, you know, this fiery, tempestuous, you know, Latino woman typecasting. She's exceptional in that role. It's a great, great, you know, property as a Broadway musical and a film version. But you know what? The roles she got offered right after that were more of the same. Here's a quote from a different interview with her where she talked about that. She says, "I had finally, with West Side Story, played the ultimate Hispanic character. And it was very hard to work after that. I was not going to play another gang role in another gang movie where I had played that before. I did not want to spend the rest of my life doing the same thing." So it's a combination of the producers only offering her that kind of Anita type role and of her saying, "No, I won't do that anymore." To her credit, she diversified. She went into television, she did, you know, musical recordings, you know, she did Broadway work, you name it. She's kept working all that time. And along the way, somehow found time for a very interesting romantic life, you know, prior to her marriage, you know, where she had love affairs with everyone from Marlon Brando to Elvis Presley. So they could have made a documentary just about that, I suppose.
You know, she talks about being cast as all these Spitfire kinds of roles where she's the feisty, you know, Hispanic lady. And how tiresome that got to be. The film does not talk about carnal knowledge, which I thought was sort of a miss because, I mean, this is a, you know, she's starring opposite Jack Nicholson and it's worth watching just for her performance, you know, just in terms of her acting. Now she says, you know, bigger than life is not difficult for me. I am bigger than life. She has a wonderful way of being the star. And yet in the documentary, she comes across as very down to earth and likable, which I think works in her favor. Now, her Oscar acceptance speech, she says, "I can't believe it. Good Lord." I'll leave you with that. Now, in terms of this as a documentary, because you do teach a course in documentaries, would you include this? And also, do you think this documentary has a shot at the Academy Award for Best Documentary this year?
I think certainly it merits an Academy Award nomination for Best Documentary. I mean, we're only halfway through the year, but it's certainly a strong documentary. She's a really strong interview subject. She's really, I mean, she's very much a star, but you know, you see footage of her in her late 80s, you know, still singing and dancing and carrying on. She holds the stage, as they say, right? But she's not a diva that way. She somehow manages to have those star attributes, but she's really down to earth. I love just seeing her like in the kitchen, just talking in the dressing room. She's really powerful that way. And so I would recommend the film because it's a fascinating career she's had and a frustrating one on occasion. She talks very directly about that. The film also has some really good archival clips. It's just fun to watch that when you get the clips from the old shows and movies. And I agree with you, Marie, there are a few omissions along the way, like in Carnal Knowledge, where she plays a prostitute. She breaks away from, you know, the Latina Spitfire kind of stereotypes that they were trying. And she's really good in that film and she's with Nicholson and so on. There are a few of the films she made that probably do deserve more mention, but you know what? You look at the filmography and it's relatively disappointing after West Side Story. She goes for years without any movies right after West Side Story. And then she has a kind of spotty, some good films, some other more marginal ones. Her real success actually was when she branched out, going to television, Electric Company, things like that, going on Broadway. She won a Tony Award for The Ritz. I mean, she's on Broadway too. She knows that she's versatile. And if you're not getting the film roles, you can only complain so much. And then you take an offer on Broadway or a concert or something. She's kept busy, in other words. She's still busy. She's a real treasure that way. She's won a lot of awards like Kennedy Center Honors and so on, Lifetime Achievement. People realize how important she is. I don't think she has as big a name with the general public as she should have, but people do know her. If you point out and nudge a little bit, "Oh yeah, right, I liked her. You know, you got to piece it together that way, but not like a superstar name." What do you think?
I agree with you completely. And I also want to add that she's 89 and she looks fantastic. And you should watch this documentary, if only to get all the gossip and backstory with her and Marlon Brando. So, and I'm glad you mentioned the Electric Company because her tagline for that was, "Hey, you guys," right? That's kind of one of her catchphrases that everybody remembers from that show. So, "Hey, you guys, watch this movie," which brings us to the end of our show. Don't forget to check out our other episodes of At the Movies with Mike and Marie at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And also you can find us under Dragon Digital Radio on Spotify and Pandora. And we will see you at the movies.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.